This is Meet the People. I'm Kels Hetherington. A federal subsidy program called Essential Air Service, which provides more than $12 million each year to airlines flying to 44 rural communities in Alaska, and a total of $200 million each year to airlines serving small airports in some 35 states, is in jeopardy. U.S. Senator John McCain of Arizona has offered legislation.
Is it likely
would they let you quit, or would they block you from being able to quit a particular route if you're the only carrier serving it?
They can't keep you flying there indefinitely. No, there's always fine print in your contracts. I actually called the Department of Transportation in Washington and clarified that. Is if the department hasn't got the funding or decides to stop paying you, then that contract's going to become null and void. It actually it's a two-edged sword. I mean, it's open for the government no matter what they want to do. But you know, when you receive a two-year commitment, airlines will set up lease structures on their aircraft. In my case, we purchased an aircraft to continue for the contract itself. So it'll pretty much not only leave the community hanging, it's going to leave the carriers hanging with pre-committed economic leases or purchase contracts that are going to be left out there. So
it sounds like It sounds like the rules are a little different. You can't abandon a community if you're the sole carrier serving that city. However, if you are a subsidized carrier and you're the sole service to that one community, you can leave that service and the community stranded if the subsidies end. Is that right?
Well, I'm sure the Department of Transportation will say you can't leave without permission. However, they cannot require you to indefinitely fly somewhere when you've told them you can't economically do it. So it's going to open up a dialogue. If they come out, let's just say they say, okay, the program's over. You know, my first question is going to be, how long are you going to continue to pay for the service? And that question's going to have to be answered. Airlines just simply cannot operate at a loss in a destination indefinitely. It's just not possible.
Which was my question too. If the program called the Essential Air Service program ends, how much longer will the subsidies continue to flow to the airlines currently receiving them?
That's a very good question. And that's the very first one I'm going to ask the Washington, D.C. when they send the notice to me, is how long will you honor the remainder of the contract period, will be my very first question. And depending based on their answer, the answer I got 2 days ago when I called in is that we have the ability to stop flying if they do not fund our route. So, but I think the government is going to have to answer that question, make it clear to me. But my understanding is that they could break the contract by not funding it.
Talking here with Mr. Sanford, who runs Island Air. He is the president of that company. We're talking about Senator John McCain's efforts to amend the FAA reauthorization bill to eliminate funding in the bill for a program that subsidizes air service to rural communities, not just in Alaska, but across America, and helps airlines that are flying in actually 35 states to the tune of $200 million. Now, Mr. Sanford, you don't receive too much money on any particular route. So would an end to this program mean that you would give up flying to certain destinations?
Well, we have, of our EAS destinations, 11 of them are on the float planes. And it's just not possible for any one destination to support that aircraft to come to fly to that destination. It's economically just not there. One of our destinations is on wheels, and it would probably get changed as far as its service frequency. For example, right now it's a direct flight to and from the village of Carlick. Just off the top of my head, more than likely it would be an add-on schedule to a closer village called Larson Bay, and the frequency would probably drop. But, you know, the water stops for sure. You know, for the 34 weeks of the off-peak season, there's just no economic way to run that flow plane on a scheduled service to those destinations without the subsidy.
But your average subsidy is only about $15,000. So are you telling me that that subsidy is the difference between making money on those routes and not making money? It's that close?
Oh, absolutely. Because the route itself, they're paired. We don't go to any one place direct. Most of them, there's three destinational stops. So if you go to three, you know, you're looking at, you know, it's not really 15,000. It's more like 45,000 for that route. And we go once a week in the off-peak season for 34 weeks, and we go 2 to 3 times a week during the 18-week peak season in the summertime. So of those 11, more than likely, the only destination that could support itself, and that would only be during that peak 18-week season, would be down in the south end of our island, a place called Alitak. But it would be for a very limited basis, you know, and its frequency might have to be cut to make sure the flights are full.
So what does an Island Air look like post-Essential Air Service program?
If it was to end, it would change to our company initially, it would mean the difference between whether you're operating multiple float planes or not. You would have to, we'd have to look at that real hard. It definitely would not be running schedules to the vast majority of the water stops. So it's going to affect a lot of people. Of those 11 water stops, 9 of them have direct tourism businesses working out of the stop or very close to it. The other two destinations, our largest hatchery on the island operates out of one, and the largest cannery outside of Kodiak operates out of the other one. So it's not just simply a matter of an inconvenience in Alaska. When you look at the lower 48, and I believe how it works down there is if an airport is, for example, let's say 75 miles, if there's no airport within another major airport within 75 miles of a city or something to that effect, then they may include a smaller airport at that city in the EAS to get a carrier to come in. You know, if they were to increase that ring out to 125 miles or, you know, it's going to be an inconvenience for a town. It's definitely going to hurt commerce. You know, people, we are very much you know, we don't store, most businesses are not storing product on their shelves. You know, commerce is the same day. Well, I'm searching for the words, but, you know, it's an overnight business type thing. Even parts and manufacturing, I think your auto manufacturers don't even store the parts, you know, if their transportation train were to shut down, they don't have a lot. So, but there, it becomes an inconvenience and hurts the lower 48, but they can do it by virtue of they have other roads and means. We simply do not have that up here. It's impossible. You take a destination and tourism businesses that have been built up, and you pull this away. Let me give you an example. On the south end of Kodiak Island, it costs $127 for a seat fare. If we only go 3 days a week, you've got, of course, your seat fare out and back of, you can help me do the math here, but, you know, a little over $254 round trip.
I'm a little slow on the math, but all right, yeah.
You also have because the virtue that you have to spend the night, the first and the second nights before the next flight, you got another couple hundred dollars to stay. So for a villager on the south end of the island, they have to spend $454 before they buy their first gallon of milk if they fly in to do their grocery shopping. Now, I'm sure most people listening can imagine if you had to do that, what kind of a burden that's going to be on you. At the same time, if we say, okay, let's get rid of the program, your charter costs, let me see if I have those handy here. I sent a letter to our congressional delegations. But your charter costs are going to be in the neighborhood of $500 each way. And then you're at least a night in town. So you're going to go from $454 to pushing $1,100 before you buy your first gallon of milk. And who can afford that? In Alitak, on the float planes, those numbers increase. It actually gets up over $1,700 if they want to fly in, pick a part up, and fly back out again. So, I'm a father of five. I've spent all my life in this country. Like many people, it's obvious that we have to make cuts in our federal budgets. There's no doubt about that. But to take a program and not just simply require cuts and reductions, which were impossible, to just terminate in this state, you're going to put a huge burden on many people. And in my opinion, what's going to happen is you're just going to transfer dollars from one program and you're going to end up spending them in another as far as emergency medical evacuations, public safety visits. It's just going to come out of different budgets.
It'll snowball, yeah, of course. Now, what about to the people who say if airlines want to make money, they ought to be flying to places and destinations that people actually want to go to? And subsidizing roads to nowhere needs to stop, and I support John McCain. To those who have that logic and say that kind of thing, how do you respond?
Well, first of all, these destinations people do want to go to. It's a proven fact. They travel to and from. These tourism businesses have grown up. My biggest question is when people ask, why should we subsidize entities, whether they call it giveaway programs or all that, I come back with the question, if you don't want to subsidize somebody, don't restrict their ability to earn a living. And that's what's happened on Kodiak. I've been here 34 years, and I've watched every historical avenue for income to our native populations dry up. Every single fishing almost species is now permitted. It's now in some kind of individual fishing quota. So when I got here, you could get in a boat, you could go out and catch a product, and you could arrange a market and sell it and start your family. Nowadays, the entry costs are so difficult. They're just impossible. And I've seen the villages shrink in size probably at least 50% on Kodiak Island. And now we're trying to put in another new program where people switch to tourism, and now they want to Noah's trying to get a sport fish charter license. And once again, we're going to start excluding all this capital that's gone in from the villages and both from people in and out of state to make a living with tourism. And they're going to start limiting the number of people who can do this based on whether you fished in, I believe it was 04 and 08. I'm probably not quite accurate on that. But so once again, we're telling people, okay, we don't want to help you, but we're going to restrict your ability to earn a living. And to me, that's where the question lies. That's where it's not right.
How has the aviation business changed since you got in it? Not just in Alaska, but for regional airlines across America?
Well, regulation, I mean, I came from when 135 rules were, there was no 135 rules, and they've continually, you know, increased regulations on airlines. To give you an example, since I've been in Kodiak Island, I've seen 22 carriers come to Kodiak. I've been here since 1977, and of those 22, there's four of us left. Two of those are owner operators. You know, you can do that math pretty easy. If you've rotated 22 businesses, different entities in the same business in 34 years, then something's, you know, you can guess it's pretty difficult. And I don't think I'm particularly unique, or Kodiak is. If you look all around the state of Alaska, that's probably been close to the story. It's a very difficult business to operate economically.
Yeah.
And
a lot of our listeners may be unfamiliar with the 135 rule that you discussed. Can you briefly tell us what that is?
Yeah, 135 is just a basic entry level. If you want an on-demand charter system, those are the rules that the government sets down that we have to abide by. From there, you go to, like, we're a 135 commuter. We're a scheduled commuter airline, and you have a little more rules. And the next step up is your major airlines, scheduled carriers like United. Penn Air's one in this state. ERA's another 121, and they're 121 carriers. And it's just more rules, more in-depth requirements to operate under those rules.
Now, we should just remind folks who are listening to this program, it's Meet the People. I'm Kels Featherington talking with Mr. Sanford, who runs Island Air. We should remind people that the Essential Air Service Program that John McCain is trying to cut in the reauthorization bill for the FAA is not just for small airlines. It's actually for majors, too. Alaska Airlines gets $2.7 million in change to fly its 737 in and out of Cordova. Does that make sense for a huge airline and major U.S. business to be getting a subsidy? How do you defend that one?
Well, it's going to come down to the same thing. What's the economic outlooks from that $2.7 million? You know, Alaska Airlines, they fly millions of pounds of fish to how many businesses, and what's the economics that are tied to that $2.7? So Cordova, I don't know the population. I've spent time over there, but you take that, what's there, 500,000 people, and spread that over per person, and then the economics of the value of your Copper River fish that's all flown out, you know, you may find that that's a pretty cheap number for the amount of business and economy that's actually produced out of there. So, I mean, to my knowledge, if this program, it's the same, it may be bigger numbers, but it's the same principle. If Alaska isn't subsidized and they can't turn a profit, goods and services are going to have to go up tremendously, and what that's going to do is kill employment. And I mean, don't we indirectly, aren't we subsidizing our road maintenance? And its infrastructure is what it comes down to. What you're funding is infrastructure, and without infrastructure, you are not going to produce broad-based business opportunities.
Interesting point. So do you believe that this program called Essential Air Service will really be cut, or is this a political debate that happens every year on Capitol Hill around budget time?
I think Americans are are at the point where they're not really focusing on being from one party or the other. They want to see results, and they want to be responsible decisions being made with our lawmakers. We cannot spend. I've been running my business for my whole adult life, and if I overspend, there's a penalty to pay. So I learned a long time ago that if you try and force any one entity. And I tried this in my own business to save jobs. I personally went on unemployment once years ago, and it destroyed me. And it did save the jobs, but the pain and suffering that was put out there was something that I've never forgot. And you can more easily spread out and take a broad-based cuts in programs, and people will adjust, and without cutting the arteries. And I believe that the Essential Air Service program can easily be cut.
Now, have you been in touch with your Washington delegation? What are Senators Murkowski and Begich saying in response to your concerns?
We've sent the data. I was told that by late this week or early next week, there should be a vote on this. I know the state of Alaska, with Senator Gary Stevens, put out in his letter that Senate Resolution 2, basically denouncing the termination of the program, is being sent back to Washington, and that's through our state legislature. So I think people realize the seriousness of all this.
Now, I tried to get the Regional Airline Association to come on the radio and discuss the possibility that the Essential Air Service Program could be ended. And they were willing to do it and then not willing to do it. And I noticed, looking on their website, that few of the airlines flying in Alaska are actually members of the Regional Airline Association, Washington, D.C. That's a curiosity for me. Why are not more of the airlines in Alaska members of this group? Or are they trying to do something and advocate for a position that perhaps is not the position of the business is in the aviation industry in Alaska? What's up with this?
Well, most carriers in Alaska are part of the Alaska Air Carriers Association. They seem to have more of a pulse of the needs and of our carriers. I mean, Alaska's a unique situation. Our destinations are unlike any other place in the country, and our problems and difficulties are much different in many ways. So it's I'm a small carrier with 6 aircraft, you know, and the regional association in the lower 48 is just, it's just not representative. Honestly, I don't know a lot about them. There's no contact with them. We all use the Alaska Air Carriers Association.
Well, Bob Sanford, thank you for coming on Meet the People and talking about this important program with us.
You bet. My pleasure. Thanks for calling.
All right. All the best to you and Island Air.
You bet. Bye.
Bye. That is Bob Sanford. He runs Island Air in Kodiak. And we're talking about the Essential Air Service Program, which John McCain is trying to cut through legislation to amend the reauthorization FAA bill that is currently going through Congress. I'm Cal Thurington, and that is Meet the People for today. Meet the People is produced right here in Sandpoint on 830 AM KSDP Radio, and it's distributed by the Native Voice One Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.